This week's parsha is Va'era, and several years ago in Shul, I asked the following question. I think it's a well-known question, but I think when I asked it, it was the first time it really troubled me that when I was reviewing the parsha, it really stood out in terms of something that is quite shocking, because we'll see in a moment what I'm about to share with you is something that's so well-known and it's so much celebrated. And yet the initial reaction of the Jewish people to that which we celebrate today was not only muted, but basically was completely ignored. And I'm referring to the following. At the beginning of the Parsha, once again, Hashem appears to Moshe Rabbeinu after his initial failed mission or seemingly failed mission the first time around when he went to Paro and demanding that the Jews would leave Mitzrayim, leave Egypt. And unfortunately, not only did Paro refuse, he made matters worse for the Jewish people. Moshe left despondent, rejected. He felt he was a failure. At the beginning of our parsha, God once again appears to Moshe and tells him that he needs to appear before Paro. And in the past, God says that I appeared to the Avos, to our forefathers, Bekel Shakai, with the name of God that symbolizes, Rashi says, the promises that will unfold, the ultimate fact that the Jewish people will become a great nation and that they will inherit the land of Israel. But Shmi Hashem, the name of Hashem, Yudkei Vavkei, which Rashi understands only in Midas HaRachem, the attribute of mercy, but actually fulfillment, acting in a way where God demonstrates his mercy, well, that the Avos, our forefathers never saw, but now the Jewish people will now experience it, right? The Jewish people will now finally see all the promises, the covenants that I created will now become actualized. And then, and here's now the part I want to focus on, that God says, I've heard the cries of the Jewish people, and therefore I want you to go back to them and say the following, L'chein amor levnei Yisrael, ani Hashem, I am God. And here's the words, vot seisi eschem mitachas sivos Mitzrayim, I'm going to take you out. Hotseisi, Yitzalti Yashem, I'm going to rescue you from the Avodasam. Ka'alti Yashem, I'm going to redeem you. Dizror Netuya, Shvatim Gdolim, an outstretched arm, great wonders. V'lakachti Yashem, and I will take you. Lili La'am, you'll be my nation. V'yisi Lachem Le'elokim, and I will be to you as the God. V'datem, and you will know, Kani Hashem, that I am Hashem, your God. Ha'botsi Yashem, Itachas, Sipos Mitzrayim was taking you out of Egypt. The Basius Lam, and ultimately I will bring you all to the land of Shinasasius Yadi, Laseso Soli Amis Liakov, and Asatius Alechem or Shani Hashem. Ultimately, I'm going to bring you into the land. God says to Moshe, share that empowering message with the Jewish people. I share those rousing words, though, that commitment, those expressions of what I'm going to do, how this process is going to unfold, ultimately the Hevesi, share that with the Jewish people. Wonderful. And so we know these expressions, they're so famous and they're so important to us, and we so much cherish these words because we have a tradition that, God willing, in a few months, we'll gather around the Seder table. Hopefully, we'll be able to gather around with other people, with family and friends, God willing. Or even if we're by ourselves and we're sitting at the table, at the Seder table, we're going to, those words, that they are the reason, or at least the asmachta, the hint, as to why we drink four cups of wine at the Seder. Right, why not one cup of wine? Usually, you drink one cup at Friday night, at Yontif, you have a one cup. Why do we have four cups of wine at the Seder? So Rashi, for example, in his commentary at the beginning of this of the 10th chapter of Maseches Pesachim, where it talks about the opening Mishnah, talks about this requirement of having a dal kosa, four cups of wine. So Rashi tells us keneged arba lishone gula, that it corresponds to the four cups of redemption. There are five expressions. I'll get to in a moment why we don't have why the fifth cup is not an obligation, and if you do drink a fifth cup or not, but at least the four cups of wine, right? Those four initial expressions, the right? Those correspond to these four cups of wine that we drink at the Seder. When we're drinking those four cups of wine, we're thinking about God's arousing words to the Jewish people, right? His commitment, his words of inspiration, that that on the onset of the 10 plagues, that this was what God said to Moshe and told him to transmit to the Jewish people. It's beautiful. It's wonderful. It shows God's love for us. What's the problem? The problem is the reaction of the Jewish people. Right? This is the part that only a couple of years ago, I only really paid attention to this. It just stands out for the way the Jewish people responded to these words. And then in comparison to how much we, these words mean so much to us, how we celebrate these words, how they're so much a part of our annual Seder. What's the response of the Jewish people? So Moshe, he carries out his mission. He tells the Jewish people what the God said. Vaydaber Moshe Kein al Bnei Yisrael. And what are the Jewish people's response? Lo shamu al Moshe. They did not listen to Moshe. Mikotzer ruach umeavoda kasha. From mikotzer ruach, it's hard to translate kotzer ruach, but they were lacking a spirit. They were deflated. Meavoda kashan from the harsh labor. In other words, what's the reaction of the Jewish people? Nothing. They responded with indifference, right? That it didn't register, it didn't inspire them, it didn't motivate them. And again, just when you compare it to the way that we look at these words and we celebrate these words, there's such a dichotomy between the two. They don't jive. They don't. They're direct polar opposites. We celebrate these words, and the Jewish people, at least initially, it didn't mean anything to them. So I want to go back and try to understand what exactly was the message of these words, and why was it, and then why was it rejected, and then what's the long-term lesson and message, and why, in fact, do we celebrate these words? Why do we use these words to that they are the basis of our drinking, or at least they are the remez, the hint, the asmachta, they are the illusion of why do we drink the four cups of wine? And then how does the fifth expression fit into this as well, the hevesi? I once gave a whole Shabbos Nagadol drush on this about the kosher olio. That connects to the fifth cup, but we'll get to that in a moment. So first, the four expressions. So it's often attributed to the nativ, but I saw that the Malbim says something similar as well, that what these four words are, you can ask the question, are these words like synonyms? Is this God just being cute with linguistics, basically saying the same thing? Or do these four words, these four expressions, do they represent different ideas? So, and then I'll ask one other interesting question that the Nativ asked as well. He says, okay, so, and if they're so important, these words, so why specifically do we commemorate them by drinking wine? Why not have four matzahs? Why not have us four servings of charoses? Why not, eat four carrots? Why specifically a wine? The Tziv asked that question. So let me, I'll read, the Tziv says this in the Malbim as well. I'll use the Malbim's words. He says the following. See where to begin. Here, okay. Here he begins by saying, "Bitzalti eschem mi'avodasa." So the first thing that God says is that I will. The first thing he says, "Otzi eschem," right? I will take you out. So he says, "Otzi eschem mitachas slivos mitrayim shemitzayin sevil ha'avel akasha shechmid aleim shalos eslam tevet." That what was going to be happening here was going to be a slow process. This wasn't going to happen overnight. Hashem was telling Moshe to tell the Jewish people. Not like, you're going to go to sleep and I'm going to wake you up in the middle of the night and take you out, in an instant, tomorrow, right? Now there's a message wasn't go tell the Jewish people to get ready because tomorrow you're going to leave. No, it's going to be a long drawn out process. And I think we have a tradition that the plague that took, at least I think it took about a year for them to unfold. And so this process was different. There was going to be different stages that the servitude and the shibud, the fact that the Jews were enslaved and the work and everything that they were afflicted with it was slowly going to decrease. And so the first step, the step of the Hotsesi, is that the backbreaking labor, you know, the fact that they now had to, you know, make their own bricks, and they, you know, that Paro didn't diminish the workload, even though it was going to take a double amount of time and effort to construct and to build what they did previously. That was the first thing that was going to go away. That's number one. And then the next step is Vihitzalti Yesfem. Sha'akar Makas Bechoros Nifsaka Avoda Legamri. Ultimately, after the 10th plague of Makas Bechoros, they would no longer have to work at all. Now, it sounds like, according to the Malbim, that during the 10 plagues, the Jews, although the work wasn't as painful as it initially was, they still were slaves. They still had to get up in the morning and pour the coffee for their Egyptian masters. They still had to go to work from 9 to 5, whatever it was, and still do work. So initially, the backbreaking labor, having to make their own bricks, that was taken away at an earlier process. But the complete process of being enslaved, so that didn't really end until after the Makas Bechoros, the 10th plague. And then you have Baga'alti Yeschem, which I will redeem you. What is I will redeem you? Shezeh haya kishetovo ha-mitzvim b'yam. Although the process of enslavement ended after the 10 plagues, but the Jews didn't really feel like they were free until the Egyptians drowned at the sea. Right? They were running away from the Egyptians. And the Egyptians at any point could perhaps get them and take them back. And then that seemed to come to fruition as they were caught at the sea and the Egyptians were pursuing them. And therefore, they only really felt a sense of relief and safety only after the whole miracle, the splitting of the sea and the Egyptians drowning in the sea. That was the Vega'alti, the third stage. And then finally, Velakachti, which is the fourth stage, that's the stage where they encountered God at Har Sinai. Right, that's when they were given a purpose and a mission, and they were given a covenant was created between them and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right, Lakachti Adavar Sheni Hu Matan Torah says in the Tziv, that's the giving of the Torah. Ekach Eschem Lilam Ze Yegamkim Aide Shem Havaya, and he shows that again God, out of His love, out of His mercy, He took them as a special nation. So says the Malbim, and again the Tziv develops this as well. That it was this four-stage process. It wasn't automatic. It wasn't immediate. It didn't happen overnight. But it was a gradual process of redemption. And says the Netziv very beautifully, back to the question, why the wine? Why the wine? So he says that that wine is. It when a person drinks a wine, so it causes a gradual change in the person, right? That wine, if you begin to drink it and it begins to digest it, so it can relax you and you can, you know, it causes a change in a person. It's a slow, gradual change. So that the wine symbolizes this gradual process of the Jewish people being ultimately taken out of servitude and being a slave and being a rescue and redeemed from Egypt. I thought also you could add that that wine is, the longer that, this aged wine is better, right? You know, you want to age it, you know, in a barrel at a certain, and only after a certain period of time does it then reach its, the greatest taste that it can have. And so for the Jewish people also, again, it was this gradual process, right? It needed to take time for the Jewish people to truly benefit the redemption. So, okay, so that's all sounds wonderful, right? So it's this gradual process of redemption. It's not automatic, but it's going to take time. And then I'll get to the Havesi in a moment. But then the question is, why is this necessary? Like, why can't it be automatic? Why couldn't it have occurred overnight? Right? Why? And so I heard a number of years ago from one of my teachers, Jacob J. Schachter, I've heard him several times over the years cite this. There's a very beautiful medrash that brings us back to the last week's parsha, to the burning bush. At the burning bush, so Moshe's arguing, you know, nonstop with Hashem. He doesn't want to take upon himself this mission, this responsibility. And, you know, Rabbi Shachter says, like, you know, what's going on here? You know, number one, if God tells you to do something, you do it. Right? You don't ask questions. Avram Avinu, right? Like the Akeda. God's going to tell you to do something, you do it. Right? You don't ask questions. Number two, didn't Moshe care about the Jewish people? I mean, no, he did care about the Jewish people because he's the one who, you know, he saw one Egyptian, you know, hurting the Jew. So, you know, he killed the Egyptian, right? He cared deeply about the Jewish people. So what was happening here with Moshe? You know, and then, but then finally, he asked, then at one point God got fed up with Moshe. When did God get sort of lose it with Moshe? When Moshe said, Shlach na biyat shlach, send whoever you want to send, but just don't send me. Right? And that's when Hashem said, sorry, you're going. And that's end of this discussion. So, like, you know, why did like Moshe say that? If Hashem told him that he's the one and it needed to take place, so why is he not want to take responsibility? So the Midrash very beautifully says, and the Midrashim often do this, they compare words in different places of Tanakh and put them together. But he says, Shlach na biyat tishlach. So that word, send who you want to send. The Midrash says, you got to take a look all the way at the end of Tanakh, at the end of the Bible. Look in the last prophet. Who is the last prophet? Malachi. And we say this Haftorah on Shabbos Agadol, right before the Shabbos, right before Pesach. What does it say at the very end? The famous words, Hine Anochi Sholeach Lachem Esalyo Anavi Lifnei Bo Yom Hashem, right? That ultimately I'm going to send, right, Elijah the prophet, right? And then the great, and that's when the great day is going to come, right? And Elijah is going to herald the Mashiach. So just Rav Shachter, based upon this address, that what was Moshe doing at the burning bush? Right? What was Moshe? You know, what was Moshe arguing with Hashem? And who did Moshe, when he mean, when he said, send whoever you want to send, what did he mean by that? He was telling God, don't send me, send Eliyahu Navi. Because if you send me, I know what's going to happen, right? I'm going to take them out, but, you know, the Egyptians are going to chase them at the seashore, at the shore, and then Amalek is going to attack us, and eventually, you know, we'll make it to Israel, but then we're going to have all these problems with the Canaanim, and on and on, Jewish history. Right, one tragedy and one difficulty and one painful event after the other. Moshe says, I love the Jewish people so much, don't send me, just end it all right now. Just send Eliyahu Navi, Mashiach, redemption, and end of the story. Right, because you can live forever in peace and live in the land of Israel without any threats, without any enemies, without anything to be concerned about. Just send Elio, don't send me. And so what is Hashem's response? Of course, Hashem's response is that redemption doesn't work that way. Right? That's not how Geula unfolds. But it's a process. It's something that takes time. And in fact, there's a beautiful and powerful Ibn Ezra. The Ibn Ezra, in a couple weeks in Parshas Bishalach, we are also at the sea when the Egyptians are pursuing the Jewish people. So the Ibn Ezra asked the following question. He says, what were the Jewish people so afraid about? There were 600,000 of them. How many Egyptians could have been chasing them? And then he says, well, what's so difficult about fighting Amalek? How many people from Amalek probably came to attack them? There were 600,000 people. So he said, so Ibn Ezra says, you know why it was so difficult for the Jewish people? Because it's hard to transition. But to transition from a slave mentality to being people who are free, it doesn't happen automatically. And that's redemption. Redemption doesn't happen in an instant. It has to, if you want to be effective in long term, it has to be a gradual process. And he says, ultimately, that's why they had to wander for 40 years in the desert. And ultimately, that generation left Egypt never was going to be successful for them to be enter into Israel. They never would have been the ones to build a nation in Israel. because it's just the way things work and operate. There's individuals who are able to make that quick transition, but the people as a whole, an entire nation, it's expecting too much. And God understands that. That's why God makes it a slow process, right? Even that initial leaving of Egypt, it can't be. It's gonna be too much of a shock to the system to leave overnight. You have to be slowly prepare for it and to get ready for it. And there's a very powerful Yerushalmi. Again, I've heard Rabbi Schachter, J.J. Schachter, cite this Yerushalmi many times. The Yerushalmi of Maseches Yuma, where it says that these two rabbis are taking a stroll in the land of Israel, and it's dark and it's getting towards the end of the night, and they begin to see the dawn, and there's only a little tiny light. It takes time until ultimately the sun then appears above the horizon, and then all of a sudden there's this great light that emerges. So one rabbi turns to the other and says, "Well, that's how redemption is going to happen. Like kimma, it's going to be slowly, step by step. It's going to be going to take time, and then eventually after that process, then the light will appear." And then the Gemara then cites the story in Megillas Esther, where it quotes the various psukim that each step is necessary for the next step to occur. With Mordechai, his position, and Haman, and then everything was needed, and the king not being able to sleep, and Esther being appointed as queen. Like everything, one step was necessary for the other step to then occur, the Gemara concludes, ultimately, Laihutim Haisa or Vesimcha Vesosla Mikar. Now, in order for the Jews to have a joy and happiness and celebration, those other steps first had to occur and to unfold as well. And therefore, coming back to our parsha, so the Netziv, so why did the Jews, why didn't they accept this originally? Right, what was the issue? So the Netziv says the following. So the expression "me'avoda kasha," that from the back-breaking labor, he says, "V'hayol hem penai lifpanos l'davar." So first of all, they couldn't even concentrate, right? Moshe's trying to talk to them. There's taskmasters who are beating them, and they couldn't even focus on what Moshe was saying because they had to work. They couldn't take a break. They couldn't huddle up and listen to Moshe's speech because that would have been impossible. Or he quotes a medrash that says that perhaps they were concerned, right? And this gets to the fifth cup about Vehevesi, that they didn't necessarily, who said they wanted the last part of the deal, right? The last part of the deal was to develop a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? But often she'aleim hashkachas Hashem ha'biyavodaso. It ultimately was to get the Torah and then to enter into Eretz Yisrael to develop a relationship with Hashem, right? Who said they wanted that? And that's why, I believe it's the Netziv, right? It is the Netziv that explains that, the Netziv says the following, that's why the fifth cup is not an obligation, right? The first four cups that are about, it's all Hashem. Hashem did everything. Hashem, he redeemed us. He took us out. He rescued us. He brought us to Har Sinai. So that Hashem all did for us. So that's an obligation. We all experienced it. And therefore that, we drink the four cups of wine. But entering into the land of Israel, right, and creating a nation within the land of Israel, that required our effort. That required our work. And the Netziv therefore says, what's the kotzer ruach? The first expression that they were of low spirit, let's say. Nishima Kitsara, the Kashra Lispo Dibor Orech and Nidros Lahaspir Lakshiv Borach Ruach. You know what they wanted? They wanted what Moshe wanted. They wanted it to be immediate. They wanted it to be automatic, overnight. That's what the, and which you can understand. Of course, someone's, you're in the concentration camps. You're in the ghettos. Of course, you want it automatic. There's no fault on the part of the Jewish people to that's what they wanted. Right? Who could blame them for that? But Hashem is telling them, unfortunately, it's not how Hashem works. It's not how redemption works. And it's something. It's a process that has to take time and has to unfold, and we have to be prepared for it and get ourselves ready for it. And that's why beautifully the Yerushalmi, I believe, in Bava Basra, this is another famous idea, points out that when it talks about the land of Israel in these psukim, it says the following. Got the exact pasuk. Yeah, he said, "Vehivasi Yisrael, and I will bring you El Aris to the land Asher Nasasi Yadila Seisosa. I'm going to bring you to the land I promised to your forefathers Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. The Nasati Osolachem Morasha. And I'll give it to you as a Morasha. What's a Morasha? We translate Morasha as an inheritance. But the Yerushalmi points out that usually when the word inheritance is presented, it's not Morasha, but it's Yerusha. You get, your Aunt Sally passes away, so you know, she leaves you, you got to get a Yerusha from Aunt Sally. Right? You get a Yerusha inheritance. You get an inheritance. There's two times in the Torah that the Torah doesn't use the word Yerusha, but rather uses the word Morasha. One is here in the context of the land of Israel. The other one is probably even more famous, because hopefully we all of us say it every single morning. Torah Tziva Lanu Moshe. Morasha Kilas Yaakov, right? The pasuk that appears at the end of the Torah. The Torah is a Morasha. What's the difference between a Yerusha and a Morasha? A Yerusha is automatic, right? You know, if the aunt, your aunt leaves you the money, so it's automatic. It's in the will. It goes to you, right? The lawyer's got to sign off on it, but it's automatic, right? You get it. It's a Yerusha. A Morasha, however, is something that is signed for you. But in order for you to ultimately to own it, you have to work to get it. It takes effort. All right, you got to put in. You need to engage and be a part of the process, and to demonstrate that it's something that you want to achieve and attain. And that is certainly true when it comes to Torah learning. Right, the Torah is a morasha for every single Jew. Right, that God has given it to us as a gift, but if we want to internalize it, we have to work on studying it. Right, yeah, you have to study it. Shantel v'nacha, but you have to study it diligently. Right, you have to work hard at it. You have to study and pull apart and analyze and discuss and you know, you have to work really hard to internalize a Torah learning. And the same thing is when it comes to, unfortunately, to the land of Israel, or fortunately or unfortunately. That it comes to Israel, it's not just handed to us. So we got to work, you know, to make the land of Israel and to make a state and a Medina, a country, to make it successful and to flourish and for us ultimately to be deserving of a state. We have to earn it in terms of our actions and our behavior. We just don't get it, right? And the Torah over and over makes this point. Right? It says in the second paragraph of Shabbat that if we're not keeping the mitzvot, right, if we're not continuously working on ourselves, then unfortunately there can be exile. Right, we could be removed from the land. And so that's what, again, understandably, the Jews didn't want to hear at this moment, or unable to hear. Right? They didn't. They wanted everything just to be handed to them, which you can understand, you know, why they would have that perspective. Hashem is telling them that that's not how it's going to work. And again, you want that fifth cup of wine at the Seder, but not everyone is going to attain that. Right, that's something that that you have to show Hashem that you want it, and you have to work hard to be gifted that fifth cup, the bracha veivasiv, bring you into the land. And so, to wrap things up, so you know we have these four powerful expressions. They demonstrate Hashem's a love for the Jewish people, but it's a love that's with a lot of thoughtfulness on Hashem's part, in the sense that if it's too quick, it's not going to work. And that was demonstrated by the Jewish people, even in the desert, like says the Ibn Ezra. Even, you know, they needed that 40-year process for things ultimately to unfold and be able to enter the land of Israel. Things, a person, it's very difficult for a person to change their attitude, their perspective, their viewpoint so radically and so quickly. And you've probably seen your own lives. You know, sometimes you encounter people, also they go off to Israel for the year and they the comeback totally changed. And sometimes it doesn't last because when it's too quick, it doesn't. It's not really internalized, and it's, you know, a person doesn't really think through the changes they were making. But if it's over time and it's gradual, then it can become successful. And the Jewish people, when they heard this initial message, Moshe, they didn't want to hear it. They didn't want to hear it. But Hashem understood that that's how it was going to work, and that's how this was going to work and unfold. And if you think about it, every single redemption that we have experienced in our history has worked exactly the same way. So whether it's the Exodus from Egypt, whether it's the Jewish people entering the land of Israel under Yeshua, they didn't conquer in a day. It was a long, drawn-out process. Whether it was when the Jewish people returned with Ezra, a long process. Whether it was the Purim story, right? It wasn't automatic, but also it was all process. Hanukkah story, right? The Jews having to fight and the Chashmonaim, right? Or today's day and age, right? With living now in the 21st century in a modern state of Israel, right? So you know, you can get very frustrated that things are not the way we hoped they would be, and as wonderful and as peaceful as they should be. But maybe the message to us is that it's a morasha, right? That we got to be part of the process. That we have to show Hashem that it's important to us, that we're working towards a greater goal. And ultimately, it'll be more sustainable if we put in the work, we put in the effort. As we say in the tefillah for the state of Israel, you know, it's a very beautiful expression, Reishis Michas Guloseinu, that the modern state of Israel is not the redemption, it's the beginning of the flowering of redemption, right? It's like the beginning of the beginning of the beginning, but it's the beginning, right? So, and to recognize that it's the beginning, but if you want it to ultimately to be Guloseinu, our redemption, so we all need to put in the effort, to put in the work. Hashem is, you know, is granting it to us. It's a morashah to us. And Hashem is ready to give it to us fully. He wants to redeem it to us. But we have to partner with him ultimately to be deserving of that ultimate redemption. Wishing everyone a very wonderful Shabbos.